Good afternoon. We're going to shift gears here a little bit and talk about cotton. Many of the plants that exist on the planet today are here because they've evolved some sort of natural defense mechanisms, physical, mechanical, or chemical defense mechanisms. And of course, when we think about chemical defense mechanisms, we think about the alkaloids, glucosinolates, glucosides, phenolics, and what we're here to talk about today is a terpenoid, gossypol, which is found in the cotton plant. The gossypol, this chemists like to call it a polyphenolic dialdehyde. It's one of the terpenoids, and it exists in two isomers. There's a negative and a positive isomer, with the negative isomer being more biologically active than the positive isomer. The negative isomer is the one that causes the problems with the toxicity. And gossypol is a toxic compound. It's toxic to pigs and chickens. Monogastric animals can only tolerate about 100 parts per million in the diet. And of course, the pre-ruminant calf is also more or less a non-ruminant monogastric, so they also are subject to the gossypol toxicity. 50 parts per million fed to a laying hen will result in discolored egg yolks, which reduce their commercial value. Aquaculture species are various levels of toxicity. Gossypol's toxicity is largely the result of the fact that it likes to bind to divalent cations, primarily iron. When gossypol gets in the blood of an animal, it likes to bind to the hemoglobin iron, reducing the oxygen carrying capacity of the blood. And the thoracic cavity fills with fluid, and the animal more or less suffocates from within. Gossypol also likes to bind with lysine, which reduces its value in a animal diet because of reduced lysine availability. Once gossypol is bound to either lysine or iron, it it's rendered non-digestible and passes through the animal. So what we're left with is pretty much feeding all the cottonseed protein in the world to dairy cattle or beef cattle. Dairy cattle consume about half the cottonseed grown in the U.S. every year, and of course the cottonseed meal. Its usage is limited mostly to ruminant diets as well. And of course, the ruminant animal is not a very efficient converter of animal protein to, or excuse me, from plant protein to animal protein. You know, they're six or seven times less efficient compared to a pig or a chicken. So it would be quite a bit of a benefit if we could feed the cottonseed protein to more efficient users of that protein. Gossypol is a yellow pigment. It's found within distinct pigment glands within the cotton plant. These glands are distributed throughout the cotton plant, and they are visible to the naked eye, and the gossypol is sequestered within those tiny glands, again, throughout the cotton plant. In the 1950s, there was a naturally occurring mutant that was discovered, known as glandless cotton, and as the name indicates, there were no glands anywhere in the plant. So there was a lot of excitement in the cotton industry in the 70s and the 80s. In the early 70s, there was actually FDA-approved cottonseed for human consumption if it contained less than 450 ppm gossypol. So there was a lot of excitement, as I say, and there was a lot of effort went into trying to commercialize glandless cotton. The benefits of getting rid of that toxin and being able to use that cottonseed protein for animals other than ruminants, you know, the benefits should be obvious. But the problem was that, of course, when you don't have any of these natural defense mechanisms, the gossypol is absent from the plant, these defense mechanisms are gone, and so the plant was more subject to predation, both from herbivorous type animals and also insects. And so for about three decades there, the cotton industry tried every way they could to make glandless commercially viable. And of course it had problems with the fiber yield and fiber quality, and then the problem with the predation made that not really work. And so in the early 90s, Cotton Incorporated determined that what we really needed to do was figure out a way to remove gossypol from the seed, yet leave it in the plant. And that was somewhat of a lofty goal 20 years ago, but that's what we set out to do. One of the first things we did was look at the pathway of gossypol production. And we identified a critical enzyme, deltacadenine synthase, which coincidentally is the same enzyme that's absent in the naturally occurring mutant glandless plant. Glandless doesn't have Gospol because it doesn't have this enzyme to, in the last stages of Gospol production, to convert these precursors into Gospol. So we focused on that enzyme, and of course in those days we had antisense technology and things like that. But more recently we've been able to utilize more sophisticated technologies, specifically the RNAi, RNA interference gene suppression technology. And the most important thing here though is that we have combined the RNAi technology with a seed-specific promoter, an alpha globulin promoter that allows a gene to suppress Gospol production only in the seed, yet leave it at natural levels in the plant. And of course, my co-author, Dr. Kirti Rathor, is the one who has been putting all of his life's work in the last few years into generating events and growing those events out in the greenhouse. We've gone through several generations, five or six generations in the greenhouse. We have had a couple of field trials last year and this year, and we're finding that this technology, this gene suppression technology, is very robust, it's very specific, it's heritable, and what we're finding is we have more or less accomplished the goal of having normal levels of Gospol in plant tissues and little or no Gospol in seed kernel tissues, which is the protein, the economic value that we're after there. So then take that to the next level. You know, over the years, the cotton breeders have had germplasm and they've had lines of cotton that they had to discard because they had such extremely high levels of Gospol. If you have a cotton plant that has two or three times the normal amount of Gospol, those couldn't be brought along because the seed also contained those high levels of Gospol. And as we've been discussing, the Gospol is highly toxic to monogastrics. Even ruminants can only eat so much Gospol. So we've had these germplasms that we couldn't bring forward because they had these high levels of Gospol. Now that we have this gene suppression technology that can express itself only in the seed, we have the ability now to perhaps even increase Gospol presence in those sensitive tissues in the plant where we want to, prevent or reduce the amount of insect chewing and sucking insect activity in those sensitive parts of the plant. So the next step here in the U.S. is to look at regulatory issues. You know, of course, I said the glandless has already been approved, less than 450 parts per million Gospol is approved for human consumption. This is not a pesticide or a foreign protein that we're putting in the plant, so we really don't see EPA being much of an issue in moving forward on the regulatory side. We do have discussions going on at FDA about the possibility of moving this forward. And it seems that FDA is really not that concerned about Gospol. They've already plowed that ground 30 years ago. So what they're really interested in is how we're arriving at this Gospol reduction using the RNAi technology. And as we move into the discussion about commercialization and commercial value of this, you know, I like to remind people of what the rapeseed folks did, say 30, 40 years ago with the reduction or elimination of erucic acid and the creation of canola. The economic value for that plant, you know, should be obvious to everyone, and really that's more or less the same thing we're trying to do with cotton. We look at global cottonseed production. You know, on an average year, we're in the neighborhood of 37 to 40 million tons of cottonseed produced. There's more cottonseed produced than there is cotton lint by a factor of about 1.5. A lot of people don't realize there's more seed than there is lint produced. But at any rate, that gives us somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 million tons of underutilized protein. And when I say underutilized protein, I'm talking about, again, the feeding of this cottonseed protein to very inefficient ruminant species rather than directly feed it to humans or to more efficient users of plant protein. The area of interest initially here for us is, of course, French West Africa. There's quite a bit of cotton grown in that region, and cotton is very important to that region of Africa because of the export potential. They export about 1.4 million bales. They produce about 2.5 million bales and use some of that domestically, but it's a tremendous source of foreign capital for those countries. Africa as a continent, the thing I want to point you to on this slide is that there's about 1.5 million tons of cottonseed produced in Africa each year. 1.5 million metric tons of cottonseed would provide about 320 million kilograms of protein, and at a rate of about 20 milligrams of protein per person per day, that's about half of what a human needs as far as protein intake on a daily basis. If all that cottonseed was consumed or prepared for human consumption, it would provide half of the daily protein needs for about 45 million people. So this is not just trivial amount of protein. This is a considerable amount of potential here. Now, we're not being naive about the cottonseed infrastructure in Africa. You know, the cottonseed dough, I would point out, already goes into human food consumption. It does get loaded at the gin into trucks, goes to town where it goes to an oil mill, and it's processed for edible cottonseed oil. But the point too that I want to make on this slide is that this gene inserted into existing varieties of cotton in Africa does not require the farmer to do anything different, the ginner to do anything different. This cotton plant looks like cotton, smells like cotton, grows like cotton, gins like cotton, produces lint like cotton. It's just that it doesn't have any gossypol in the seed. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about on-farm oil extraction for cooking oil in Africa, interest in growing sunflowers for on-farm production of cooking oil. The glandless cottonseed oil would or could be processed using very crude technologies and made into cooking oil right at the local level. If you look at the crude oil that comes out of cotton, regular cotton, that has gossypol, the crude oil looks about like used motor oil. It's very, very dark. It has to go to a refinery to remove the gossypol that's in that oil. Yet when the gossypol is gone from the seed, when you mechanically extract that oil from that seed without the gossypol, you wind up with a nice, pretty yellow, almost refined oil. And so in closing here, to talk about commercialization, our commercialization pyramid looks a lot like the efficiency of protein utilization. Direct feeding of the protein to humans, of course, is more efficient than feeding it to other less efficient animals, so it opens opportunities for aquaculture and pigs and chickens. And we have made just about everything out of cottonseed kernels, peanut butter substitutes, soy milk substitutes, energy bars, protein drinks. Cotton is a tree nut. It's a perennial that we grow as an annual, so nutritionally it's very similar to other tree nuts, so it could be used as a tree nut type of a product. Could also be used, for those of you familiar with Plumpy Nut product, which is a ground nut fortified with minerals and vitamins product. The only downside with cottonseed protein is it's a little bit low on lysine compared to soy. But it also has an extremely high level of arginine, which is important for aquaculture production, and so we're suggesting that cottonseed protein could also play a role in increasing a supply of animal protein in aquaculture. And with that, I will close. Thank you very much.